Good morning. Today, Mirz Hashem, will be the last shiur on Hilchos Arvos. So to circle back on what we really began the series, we began by saying that although the sugya of Arvos on its face is discussing a very limited case, one person borrows money, another person guarantees it, becomes an orev. So the question is to what extent does he have liability? But we pointed out that this concept really applies to many other cases and many other examples throughout Chayshon Mishpat. So we'll begin this year by going through some of the concepts that come up in different cases, many of which we've discussed over the years. And then, time permitting, we'll go back and we'll quickly run through the remaining halakhos of a real arev that we have not had a chance to address yet. So let's begin with halakha in Siman Kuf Lamed Aleph, Sivdal Ramah. As we discussed, if one person borrows money, a person becomes an arev. So if the borrower defaults, the arev has to pay. So the Ramban, Siman Kuf Lamed Aleph, discusses the following case. A yid borrowed money from the mafia. He borrowed from a guy. Now, the mafia didn't trust this particular borrower. So another person became an arev. He guaranteed the loan to the mafia. Sure enough, the borrower defaulted. And when the goy came to collect the money from the arev, it was a $50,000 debt. But once the mafioso was in the fellow's house, he didn't just stop there, and he ended up taking more than the chayv. He took $75,000. So the arev couldn't really do much about the lender. He wasn't going to start up with the mafioso. So when he goes back to the borrower and says, "Listen, I was an arev for you. I had to pay. I want you to pay me back the $75,000 that I had to spend because of this arvos." The borrower said, "Nothing doing. $50,000, I agree, I owe you. I asked you to become an arev. You became an arev. That's how much I owed, and that's certainly I have to pay you back. But the fact that this ganiv or this anos went ahead and extorted an extra $25,000 from you, what does that have to do with me? That's your bad mazel. And that has nothing to do with my arvos, and I don't want to pay you that amount." Zok the Ramah, the loivas taina is not accepted. Why? Because when you become an arev to an anos, when the mafia is involved, everyone knows good and well, once they're involved in the situation, there's a very good chance they're not just going to take their $50,000. There's a very good chance once they're dealing with you, once there's a default, they will be in alila, they will go ahead, they will take the liberty to take more than they're entitled to. If an arev becomes a guarantor, if he puts himself at risk, he exposes himself to this risk of an alila, which everyone anticipated in the beginning, so the halacha is, it's understood as that the borrower is indemnifying him for any hefts that he may have. So therefore, although the face amount of the loan is $50,000, there's no justification for the extra money that was taken, but there's a built-in indemnification to every arev, whatever expenses could arise from this arvos. So who I did today, Baruch Hashem, people with arvos were generally not dealing with a mafia or dealing with anosim, but if there are legal fees involved, that is another cost that is anticipated, that is normal, that to happen in connection with an arvos, and you have to pay. Now, you will have to look at the particular case, because if the creditor comes to the arev and says, "Listen, you're an arev, $50,000, I want you to pay me," the arev decides to hire an attorney and fight it, and $20,000 on legal fees later, the judge gets to court. The judge says, "What are you talking about? You're an arev, the money's all, go pay it." So there, I don't think he can turn to the loiva and say that you have to indemnify me. Because who asked you to waste money on legal fees? You owe the money, go pay it. Masha'en Kane, if he has to spend this money, the fellow sues him, and even if he's ready to pay, there are certain, he has to show up in court. There are fees that have to be done in connection with the arvos, even when you're acting in good faith, and a chanami. There, I think, would be included in this halacha, and there he would be indemnified.
I'll cover you $50,000 without knowing who he has to know that based on what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
So if he doesn't know, he's just a blanket hare of your hare.
Right.
So he didn't know that.
Okay, that might be. But when the mafia knocks on his door and he tells the fellow, you know, I didn't know it was from you, and therefore the arvus is not chal. Okay, you're talking about between him and the mafia, or you're talking about between him and the loiva? You know, the argument we discussed 2 weeks ago was a defense against the creditor. That if I didn't know who it was, I gave you this blanket authorization, so then perhaps the arvus is not a good arvus. Which means if the mafia will come to Beis Din and say, is this a good arvus, or do we have a problem of it wasn't a tzivoy, I didn't speak to him directly, the mafia would lose the din Torah, again, assuming the dayanim merkayim the din of lo seguru neyesh. But here we're talking about the next step. Once the malva collects the money, there's an understood or implied indemnification that the loiva is telling the ariv, you're putting your net, you're taking a risk for me, I'm indemnifying you for any loss that happens. So there, the fact that the loiva lied to the ariv is not a reason for there to be less of an indemnification. Okay, interest, we discussed. We're dealing with a guy over here. So we're not talking about isk, we're talking about straight out ribis. Ribis, arvus on ribis would need a kinyan. Technically, in halacha, would not be binding. But in a case where the goy is the creditor and the ariv is going to have to pay that interest, that certainly would be included. And since he is nischayev, he has to pay this because of his arvus, the loiva would have to reimburse the ariv for any expense that he, any money that he has to lay out. So that depends, when you have a deal between a goy and a yid, and there's a payment, it will depend whether he's an ariv kavlin or ariv stam. Ariv stam is not a problem, ariv kavlin will be a problem, but then again, if ariv kavlin, before he signed the arvus, the ribus issue should have been addressed, because the actual signature itself was problematic. So this is the din of the Rambam. If there's any alila, even though it's not owed, you're still responsible for it. But there are two limitations to this halacha. What happens? So let's go back to our mafia case. But over here, the mafia fellow was a little bit more polite. He comes into the guarantor's house. He says, listen, I need $50,000. I'm going to break your daughter's leg. The Arev was clever enough to pull out his checkbook, hand the guy $50,000. He left. Baruch Hashem, he dodged the bullet. He only had to pay what was actually owed. Now, the problem is that when the fellow came to his house, looks around, he sees the beautiful chandeliers, the artwork that's hanging on the walls. He says, hey, this is a very juicy target. So the next day, the Arev wakes up, and he discovers his house was ransacked. Can he turn to the Arev and say, this is your fault? You're the one, can you turn to the Loiva and say, this is your fault? It's your fault that this guy came into my house, and you therefore have to pay for my hefset. The answer over here is no. The reason why the loiva is responsible is it's basically an accepting a grama. Whatever hezekos are directly caused by this loan, the loiva has to pay for. And therefore, if on the $50,000 loan, the guy takes $75,000, that's to be expected. This is the way they do business. You'll have to pay for that. However, once the loan is already closed, it's paid, it's over. Now the guy decides, now that he knows you, he decides to rob your house or something else happens. After the loan is paid, that's just a separate oinus. We say, Nebuch Mazla Goram, it's true, had this transaction never taken place, you may not have been robbed. But Lamaisa, this robbery was not directly tied to the Arvus, and in that case, the Loiva would not have to reimburse the Arev for his Hefseid. So if he still owes him a dollar, and because he owes him a dollar, that becomes the excuse to make an alila and to go ahead and to harass the person. So anything that comes from this loan is the loiva's responsibility. But this has nothing to do with a loan. It's just now they know each other, and now he just breaks into his house. So then it's true, again, it would not have happened without for the loan, but it's not directly being caused by the loan, and that's not the loiva's responsibility. Very good. It's not garmi. All these cases are only a grama. This is one of the makoros that a grama, if you agree to pay for gramas, even without a kinyan, you're responsible. So since, even though there was no discussion here, that's the chiddush, but since everyone understands that an arev would not become an arev without this indemnification, even in the absence of a kinyan, you will be responsible for a grum. Now, the second limitation is the Ramah brings down b'shem the yesh ha'imrim, that the reason why you pay is because there's an implied indemnification, that whatever happens, I'm taking achrayus for. Whenever we're dealing with a t'nai, I've accepted responsibility, so there, you're only accepting things that could be anticipated in advance. Because we know you're dealing with the mafia, so when there's a $50,000 chayiv, they go, so every once in a while they decide to collect double. Okay, that's something which when I went into it, I knew there was a risk, I accepted that risk. If it's something which is totally unheard of, the fellow, once he's talking to you, he decides to go ahead and take away your house, something which is an oinus to loy shkiach klal, to loy havali lasuki adaite, there you would not be responsible because the whole chiyuv comes from a kabbalas achrayus. A kabbalas achrayus is limited to what the parties were actually makabal, what they expected to happen. But more than that, you cannot be mechayivim. So again, if there are hezekos that could be anticipated, you are chayiv. Anything which is extreme or anything that comes afterwards, not tied to the loan, there you do not have chiyuv. So this is the halacha of the Ramah. Let's extend it to, actually, we'll give two examples, both of which we've discussed over the years in context of different halachas. Fellow leases a car. Now, a person leases a car, if he's in a minor fender bender. So, again, for the sake of this year, let's assume the leasing companies take you for a ride. And they send you these tremendous bills, much more than the actual value of the actual hezek that was caused. True or not is not relevant. Let's make that assumption for this case. What's the halacha? Fellow borrows a car from his friend from a leased car, and it's in an accident. The hezek, a shoyel is chayiv in oinsin, he's willing to pay, but he tells the fellow, listen, this damage is worth $2,000. That's how much it'll cost to fix it. The owner, or the person who's leasing the car, says, I don't care what it costs to fix it. Bottom line is, my lease is up, and I know I'm going to get a $3,000 bill. So I want you to pay the $3,000 loss that I had, not the $2,000 that a bezin will decide that is the value of the hezek. What? Okay, good. Good etzah. He didn't. In other words, what's the halacha in a case where your hezek is $2,000, but the guy is going to be mechayev you $3,000, or the car is stolen? Up he didn't, let's assume the value of the car, it's 3 years old, the value of the car is $10,000. Because of your deal with, because of the leasing company, they're going to charge you the full value, the higher amount, you're going to have to pay $14,000. How much is the borrower responsible? So, although a shoyel is chayev in oinsin, a shoyel is responsible for the item that he has. If the item is only worth $10,000, now that it's stolen, how can you be chayev more than $10,000? Elamai, you want to say he's a mazik. He's causing you a loss of the $14,000 that you're going to have to pay the company. Okay, in Hilchos mazik, first of all, it was a shoygig. Someone stole it, or maybe even an oinus. Someone stole the car. There was no kavana. It's very hard to mechayiv al grum or gami. Zok the nesivus, you're going to have to pay the full amount. Why? Midin arvus. If this car is owned by a guy, someone borrowed it from a guy, and the guy, the way they work is, if it gets lost, they will charge you $14,000, even though it's only worth $10,000. So then, if that's how it's structured, so when you're lending it to someone, you are putting yourself at risk. You are putting yourself in harm's way, not for $10,000, which is the true value of the car. You're putting yourself at risk for the full $14,000 that you're going to have to pay if it's lost. What? What if you have the car and you lend it to your friend, the person who leased the car is now exposing himself to a risk. What? Well, he's exposed to the risk if something happens to if he smashes it up. But when he's giving it to you to drive around, now he's exposing himself to this risk. If you smash it up, he's going to have this $14,000 hefzer. If he smashed it up, but now he's not smashed. He has the car, it's sitting in his house. You want to go to the city, he's giving it to you. But now that you're driving it around, by giving it to you, he's exposing himself to a $14,000 risk. That's true, but he didn't. First of all, he didn't smash it. As far as he's concerned, it's sitting in his driveway. It's not getting smashed. But besides, when he gives it to you, your driving has a risk. It's true, if he gave it to someone else, that risk would be there, then that would be that person's problem. If he would drive it, it's his problem. But now that he gave it to you, you are putting it at risk, and his risk, what he has on the line, is $14,000.
Does the shayla have to be aware of that risk?
What? This is from a nesivos by a mashkin that belongs to a guy. You probably have to know it's a leased car. If you don't know that it's leased, you can't midin arvos. You can't take arvos on something that you're not aware. But if you know that it's leased and you know they have their rules, you don't know exactly what it'll cost. That mesama, you don't have to know the details. You do have to know that it's leased and you're going to be stuck paying whatever the leasing company is going to bill him for. So zakhni nesivos, although in hilchos mazek will be pater, although in hilchos shomrim he's going to be pater, we can nail him because of this din of arvos. Since, based on your trust, based on your representation, you're going to take care of it, you're going to be responsible for it, he puts himself at risk for $14,000, even though it's more than the value of the item. Therefore, you can be mechayev him, even though there's no mazik, and even though in shemrim you cannot be chayev for more than the actual value of the item. As a similar case, the Taz has a case, is actually going on in Ramon, Simen Kuf Chav Ches, where a melamed came, there was a, someone needed a Rebbe, there was no one local who was capable of teaching, so they imported someone from another country. So the way it worked is, there's a similar concept of a sponsor. When you come in from a foreign country, the rule was that the host was responsible for any of the debts of this foreigner that stayed in his house. Because otherwise the foreigner is going to skip town, people have no recourse, so the host, the person who he stayed by, became responsible for any of his debts. Now this Rebbe, apparently, he was a Rebbe during the day, but he had a side job doing mortgages. He was lending money to Goyim. And apparently he had taken mashgoinis, he had taken collateral from the Goyim. And then he skipped town with the mashgoinis. So he left over a bunch of very angry Goyim who were owed money. The Baal Bayis, the host, wanted to take money from the Rebbe because he knew the Goyim would come after him because he was the Rebbe's host. Zok v'taz en echanami. He has the right to do that. Because, again, a similar concept. Since everyone knows when you're a foreigner and you're staying in someone's house, that person is responsible for your debts. That's the equivalent of the host becoming an arev on every time you borrowed money. If he became your arev, therefore, by definition, if he has to pay out any of those debts, people have to come to him. He has every right to turn to you and recover and say, "I was your arev. I had to pay out money, whether medin or an alila," and therefore he will be indemnified. So it's translated to a modern case: someone borrows your car. Now this is not a leased car anymore. They take your car. They go to the city. They're spending the day in the city. They go to the city, midtown, they circle around a little bit, and lo and behold, they can't find any parking spots. So, they find the hydrants, they park the car, they go inside to their meeting, they come back outside, sure enough, if by some nace the car is there, there's a ticket on the car. So fine, they take the ticket, they rip it up, they drive back home, and they return the car to the owner. 2 weeks later, the owner gets a ticket in the mail, calls up the shoyl and says, "How you talking? You borrowed the car, you're responsible to pay for my parking ticket." The borrower says, again, a very similar argument, he says, "No." He says, "I'm a shayel on the car." And it's true. A shayel is chayev in einsin. If there's anything wrong with the car, I pay you for it. But is there anything wrong with the car over here? The car drives perfectly. You're getting a bill from the parking department of New York. It's not a chisaron on the car. So my kabbalas, my chiv shmira, or my chiv einzin on the car doesn't make me liable for a ticket. What does that do with hilchos shmira? Now, okay, one at a time, we'll get there. So in hilchos shmira, l'chari, you're off the hook. Now when we went through hilchos shomrim, we did discuss a chasam sofer that a shomer could be achrayas, could be chayav on gromos, and a discussion how far that would go. But l'chari, in shmira, I'm a shomer on the car, there's nothing wrong with the car, I'm off the hook. Yeah, it's... In theory, perhaps, arguably, that would be a Hezek Shein Nikr. Now, that would go into a Marshal, where the Hezek Shein Nikr is Chayev on Shomrim. But again, it's not a bad approach, but it's you will have some problems with it. What? Well, if you take it to the pound, then the problem is you have a chiyuv shmirah. You have to return it to the guy. You have to return it. Yes, there is. So again, there is a place. Okay, so there's a nesivus that says if you take someone's item and you bring it far away, you can mechayev him al tmasek. The fact that he has to spend money to bring it back to you. No, the Nesivus in a very similar case says that you're chayiv. Again, it's a chiddush, you know, yesh lodin b'dvaro, but the Nesivus says you're chayiv in such a case. Okay, so the next issue would be mechayiv al tmasek, al garmi. Now, the truth is, in our case, it probably is a garmi, because one of the criteria of garmi is you need bari hezeka. Now, in Midtown Manhattan, you park for 2 hours, it is probably a bari hezeka, it is almost guaranteed you're going to get a ticket. So in that case, you probably would have a garmi, but let's say it was a shoigig. He's a Muncie boy, he doesn't really know the city rules, it wasn't marked so carefully, and it was a mistake. Shoigig by garmi is a very big machlekes. The shach holds garmi, but shoigig is potter. So you can't get him out shoigig, you can't get him out masik if it was a shoigig. Or if you park somewhere else, it's not in the city, where it's a suffix whether he will or won't get a ticket. So once again, we could fall back on dinei arvos. The same way, when you move into someone's house, if the rules are the host is responsible for any of your debts, there is an automatic arvus, and even if it's not discussed. So hu hadin, if you take someone's car, if the way the laws are structured are that the car owner is going to be responsible for any ticket, for any violations that the borrower violates, so the chayrim, you will be midin arvus, you'll be able to be mechayvim. Now, again, there are many other examples of such cases, but I think the klal or the yesod is whenever you have a case where there's reliance, where one party is being soymich on someone else and exposing themselves to risk because of another person's word or by trusting him, you will always have this concept of arvos, and there will be a way to be mechayiv him, even though it may fall through the cracks, it may not be a mazik or shomrim. So it's a very useful concept to be mechayiv people in such cases. No, every arvus the Gemara says is an asmachta, but because it's hemne, because you are trusting the person and exposing yourself to risk because of that trust, that is enough to be mechayiv the person even though it's an asmachta. There's a machlokes rishonim whether it's a real asmachta, whether this works by any asmachta or only over here where it's perhaps not a full asmachta. Correct. These are implied arvus, and all of these cases are you could arguably an asmachta. You don't know that it'll happen, but since you expose yourself to that risk because of that trust, in all of these cases, there are various achrayim that say that you're chayav. They were later. It was the chayavus only came about later. He lent money after he was already in, and he racked up the debts then. So it was in the future. But this is a case where we are by him staying in your house, you are becoming an arev on any single thing that he does. Now this concept is taken even further. The shita of the Ritva, which is quoted by the Nesivos in a number of places throughout Chayshin Mishpah. If anyone remembers from way back when we spoke about the din of Schiros Pailim, you hire a worker. And then you change your mind. Last minute, you tell the worker you're not interested, I don't need you, I have someone else to do the job for cheaper. Or in the reverse case, where the worker at the last minute decides he doesn't want to work for you. So we discussed in many cases, you're chayev, you're responsible for any loss that the worker had. And the achroinim and rishonim are really troubled by what kind of chayev is this? Is it mazik? Is it where does this chayev come? Is this a new takana? There are different mahalchim among the Rishonim why you're chayiv in such a case. The Ritva says this is all comes from the sugya of arvus. Because when you hire a worker, he has the ability, he can take a job anywhere. He can go down the block, he can go here, he can go there. He committed, because you hired him a job, he committed to come to you. Because of that commitment, he turned away other jobs and he showed up at work when he was supposed to. Now that you changed your mind, at that point, it's too late for him to find any other employment. Since he exposed himself to a risk based on your word, he gave up any other employment opportunities because you committed to him, I'm going to hire you. Zav the Ritva, you're chayev midin arvus. The Ritva takes this even further. The Ritva has a case, or it's really a Gemara, where a person, there was an item on sale. He sent a fellow, took it, gave a shliach money, go buy this item for me. It was a great deal. The shliach goes ahead, takes the money, says no problem. And then he gets lazy, and he didn't bother buying it. Sure enough, by the next day, the mitziah was gone. The price is back to the normal price. And the mishaleach, the principal, says, you caused me a loss because you didn't buy the item when you were supposed to. So the Gemara says you're chayiv to pay. The Ritva says this is also midin arvus. The mishaleach relied on you. He gave you the money, and he didn't buy it himself or send someone else because you said you would do it. Since you didn't, and because of that, the owner, the mishaleach, lost out on this opportunity to get this mitziah. Therefore, the shliach, he says, is responsible for the entire hefsid, all the profits that the... Oh, very good, very good. So this case is a tremendous chiddush. And in this case, many, many rishonim and achronim argue and say you can only use arvus on a direct loss. I lend someone money because you're an arev, so now when the borrower defaults, you have to pay me back what I lent, what I lost. In this case, there's no hefsid moment. You gave up an opportunity to profit. You could have bought it at a bargain, and now you can't. So in that case, although the Ritva extends arvus even to that case, there lahalacha, you're not going to be able to be mechayev him. Again, the Sivas goes with it, but the Chazon Ish says it's medayik from all of the Rishonim, not like this. There is no arvus on a minyas harevach, and the Chazon Ish says you will not be chayev in such a case. If he couldn't have done, if it's midin arvus, if the mishaleach had no other way of doing it, then it's not. Then there can't be any arvus because it's not a hefsid. There's nothing else for him to do.
He told him to pay a bill, and because he didn't pay the bill, he lost whatever, tremendous, he lost money.
Correct.
Right.
That would be easier. That would be easier. Now again, all of these cases, just to be clear, all these cases that we've gone through, where various achroinim use arvus to be mechayev a person, virtually every case we discussed is controversial, because we went through in the past shiurim, there are a lot of conditions you need for arvus. For example, one is zreik mono liyam does not work according to machlokes rishonim. It could be you need someone else's hana to have direct hana from it. In a case where you don't pay a bill and now there's an outside loss, it could be doimut to zorek man aliyam unless you use the svaras that we mentioned earlier. There's an implied being kabbalas achrayus on grum. So again, I know I'm throwing out a lot quickly, but any of these cases is machlokes. I'm not telling you that in these cases a clear achra. My point is just that I'm just giving examples where different achroinim use arvus for cases that are much broader than a standard loan with a kabbalah sakrayas. Now, one last case is the erech shai, is where a person tells someone, go hire workers to do a job for me. The fellow hires the workers and didn't pay them. Sure enough, they sued, and there were expenses involved. So here as well, the Erech Shai says we can use this concept of arvus, and he says because when you hire workers, you know if you don't pay them on time, they're going to be hafsedim, there are going to be losses involved. Therefore, the employer, the mishaleach, is implicitly accepting responsibility, and if anything happens, he is going to have to make good on that chayv. Okay, so now that we've gone through these cases, let's just go back now and try to fill in some of the cracks and some of the halachos of a regular Arev that we did not have a chance to do over the series. I'm going to go rather quickly because I really want to get through all of the halachos in the next 15 minutes. We discussed by Rikos that if someone guarantees a loan, if the borrower defaults, the guarantor has to pay. What happens if the borrower doesn't default completely, but he tells the lender, you know, I don't have the cash available, I'll pay you over time. So over here, the halacha is that is the same thing as a default, because since in halacha if the entire amount is due, it's true in a chanami that it's common for a lender to extend the time period because that's the way to get your money, but he doesn't have to. And if he wants to go to the guarantor and say, I don't want to wait for my money, you pay me and let the orev pay you or have a payment plan with you, he had every right to do so because he has no obligation to go ahead and to wait to get his money. Yeah, whatever he has now, if it's an Ariv Kablin, you can go right after the Ariv. If it's an Ariv Islam, you have to go after the Loiva first, and you'd have to take whatever is available. But the amount that's being promised, I'll pay you, that you can go after the Kablin for. Now, in any time there's an Ariv involved, you want to collect from the Ariv. So we mentioned that you have to prove the loan still exists. When there's a milva al peh, you lend the money, there's total trust, there's no shtar. So if the borrower says, I paid you, the Arev is off the hook. Because the same way the borrower is potter, the Arev's, an Arev stam's liability is only to pay when the loiva has responsibility. Since the loiva is potter, certainly the Arev stam would be potter as well. What if the loiva admits, I never paid the debt? So the creditor says, you owe me the money. The borrower says, it's true, I taka owe it to you. The Arev says, how do I know this is true? Maybe you're lying. Maybe this is a knunya. You're just doing this because you know I have money. I'm going to pay the creditor. And now the loiva is going to cut a deal with him and split the money. Why is the loiva neman to say that he didn't pay when it's coming at the Ariv's expense? So last week we mentioned one svara from the Chochma Shloima in the Bach the Bach is not going to is not like this, but the Tzoyis in Simon Lamentes says like this. The Tzoyis says that there's a concept of any yodei imperatich is chayiv. If you know that you borrowed money from someone and you're not sure if you paid it back, so there's a cheskas chayiv, you have to pay even though you're not sure and even though there's no evidence. Cheskas chayiv, any yodei imperatich is chayiv. Zok the Tzoyis, a chiddush, by an arev, even an arev stam, because we know you were makabel arvos, and in the absence of a payment from the borrower, the Ariv is on the hook. Therefore, he says, any question whether the money is still owed is an any dem paratich, and therefore he is going to be, the Ariv will be chayiv, even though there's no solid evidence that Itaka owes the money. Now this is, we mentioned last week a Chochma Shloimeh in a Bach that said the opposite. Chochma Shloimeh in the Bach says, since an Ariv Stam is only liable when there's a default, an Ariv Stam is an any dem nischayavti, because you only become chayiv once there's a default. If you don't know there's a default, then any is chayavti. The Tzoyis argues, Tzoyis says, in any dem paratich, and therefore you're going to be chayiv as long as the loiva is agreeing, the money is still outstanding. The Nesivus has a different approach. The Nesivus says the reason why you pay is very simply. You are makabel arvos. By definition, how in the world do you ever prove a milva al peh is still owed? There's no shtar. How is it, even if you have all the Edom in the world, how are Edom ever going to testify that the money wasn't paid back? How do you testify that something didn't happen? If they closed their eyes for 2 minutes, maybe the loiva went ahead and paid. Zok the Nesivus, because you became an Ariv in a case where it's impossible to prove that the money, that the debt is still outstanding, obviously, when you became an Ariv, you were agreeing to pay, kolzman, there is no evidence, there's no reyesa in the choiv. And therefore, in such a case, even though it's really a suffix, even if it's not an idea imperatif, still, since you're makabel arvos, you would have to pay. No, but the malva said, "I want an arev." And an arev by milva al peh, if this is not the halacha, an arev al peh it's totally meaningless. There is no case in the world that he'll have to pay. That's true, but just like we mentioned, that you can give over nemanos. And if you look at most shtaros, it says that usually the malva has nemanos, he's believed to say that it wasn't paid. Here, there's an implied nemanos. Because the arvus is totally meaningless if you go with regular dinim of Tain Venitan, again, not like this tzoyis. So then it must be your makabel to pay when the loiva agrees, the loiva is outstanding. Otherwise, the whole arvus is meaningless. But it's only in this case where the loiva agrees the money is outstanding. If the loiva skips town, there already the halacha is different. There you will not be able to collect from the loiva unless you have proof. And therefore, a milva bal peh, where the loiva is not around, you will not be able to recover unless it's teich zmanoi, because there will just be a suffix, you'll have no way of knowing where the money is still outstanding. In Arv Kablin, we mentioned there's a machlokes. By an Arv Kablin, the way the Bach learns is that because there's a cheskas chiyuv over there, he has primary achrayas. There, it could be the Kablin has to pay even if the loiva skips town. The Shach, on the other hand, argues, and it's going to be hard to be moitzi mamon because, again, it is a sveika didina. Now, a very common issue is what happens if a person borrows money for a year. The Ariv agrees to guarantee it. The end of the year comes and goes, and the chayiv is still outstanding. The creditor did not collect the debt immediately. 5 years later, he calls the Ariv and says, remember 5 years ago you signed as a guarantor? Okay, I want you to pay up. Guarantor says, now you're waking up 5 years later? I agreed to be an Ariv on a one-year loan. Back then, I had a relationship with the borrower. Back then, the borrower had money. You're coming to me 5 years later, it's too late. My arvos expired, and I don't have to pay. So this, again, is a tremendous machlokes. It's a machlokes what the halacha is. It's a machlokes where the machlokes is. In other words, some shita say that if the borrower had money at the end of the year, and the malva decided to wait, and now the borrower is bust. So there already the Bach says that everyone agrees in that case the Ariv is off the hook. Because the Ariv can tell the malva, I only agreed to be an Ariv for a year because at the end of the year I knew he'd have money. But if you waited and you didn't collect it when it was available, don't come to me now. Others actually say punk fakert, that if the borrower didn't have money then, and he still doesn't have money, so then it's pasha, the Ariv is going to be responsible to pay. There's no suffix. Because what benefit would you have had if he would have come to you 4 years earlier? You would have had to pay then, you would have had to pay now. The suffix is only when it's not clear, maybe he did have money, maybe he didn't have money, and things could have changed, then we have a shiloh whether there's an assumption or there's an umdana that Arvus has an expiration date. But in a case where he never had money, since even back then the Ariv would have had to pay, he would still have to pay no matter how much time passed between when it was due and when he actually wakes up. Now, hold on. This discussion is only by an Ariv Stam. By an Ariv Kablin, so there already the Pesach Teshuvah brings down, everyone agrees the Kablin is liable. Since he has primary liability, when the Chayiv was due, you could have gone to him right then and there and taken it from him. So in primary responsibility, these kind of arguments are not good arguments. The only way out is when the borrower has money and you tell the malva, go take it, or he's available, and the malva's pesheya, then you'll have a taina. But in a typical case where you just don't push him, so that because you have direct achrayus, this halacha won't apply. Today, where almost every arev is written as an arev kablin, therefore this halacha will not be so relevant. Also, in most typical guarantee documents, this is addressed. Apparently, this is a legal issue as well, and therefore it usually says that not demanding it or is not a waiver of the arvus, and it will remain in force indefinitely. Right. So that's not a garmi. It's not a garmi because it's indirect. Had he gone after you, then you could have gone after him. But it's not a garmi. It's at most indirect. It's only when he has the money and you tell the malva, go get it from him, and he doesn't, then there's a svar of you were pesheya and I wasn't makabel arvos on your pshia. But in a case where simply he happened to have had the money and the malva didn't, it was just went to sleep, there this halach will not apply. Sure. Every place can actually speak out. If you say I'm an Ari for 1 year only, then that's it. And then it's a davar sheva mamon, whatever agreement is made, then that will be binding.
Does an Ari have a right to go collect from a loiver without having the bet shelter
of
the money?
So it's like this. So like, if the malva comes to the Ariv and says, pay up, the halacha is an Ariv, even an Ariv Kablin has the right to go to the loiver and say, I'm on hook for you, you go pay him so I don't have to pay out. So he doesn't have to wait to make a tzvi. So that's clear. Even by an Ariv Kablin, he has the right to force him to pay it up. And if he does that, if the loiva has money, but that's between the Ariv and the loiva. Here we're discussing between the Ariv and the malva whether a delay releases the Ariv from his responsibilities. Now, if a person who commits to be an Ariv, even if he makes a kinyan, the halacha is until the money is actually advanced, he has the right to be chozer. This is a davar shelo ba'olam. It's an agreement to do something in the future, and therefore, until the actual once the loan is advanced on your word, obviously it's too late. You can't change your mind. The money is already gone. But until the money is advanced, until the actual loan, the arvos, even if it was agreed to, even if a kinyan was made, is not binding, and the arvos would have the right to back out and tell the lender, "I changed my mind. Don't give him the money. I'm withdrawing my arvos." Correct. So this we find this by shlichus and by harsha. You have to mevatel b'fanav. Otherwise, you have the same that once you tell the person, go lend money on my say so. Now there is a discussion. The Erech Lechem says that when you tell an arev, when you tell the creditor, go lend money on an arev. So he's in such a case where you told it to him, he can lend money. He doesn't have to be choishish that you were choizer. But his lashon is for a few days. If you tell someone, I'll be your arev, and a year later he lends the money, then already the creditor would have to ask you again because he doesn't have the right to assume you're still in. But if it's shortly afterwards, you could rely on it. What the cutoff line is obviously is somewhat of a judgment call.
Does he need a kinyan to get out of there?
No. Because the whole arev, the same way arev doesn't need a kinyan, it's when he lends money on your say-so, your trust, that's enough to be nischayev. So when you cancel it, you're basically telling him, you know, I'm out. So if you want to let it, do it on your own risk, so that wouldn't need a kinyan. Now, what happens if there are multiple arevim? You have a person or a gemach that lends out $10,000. They need arevim, but they're not comfortable with one arev. They want two arevim. So now that you have two arevim, what happens when there's a default? Is each of them responsible for the entire amount? Or is each of them responsible only for half? You have to each one of them for half. What? So if you speak it out, so whatever you speak out certainly will go. The problem is if it just says there, you have a halva, and two people said, tenloi v'anietin. Two people became a raven without specifying what their respective obligations are. So this is a machloikis. Well, no, there are two reasons. Because it could be you want more security. This way, even if the loiva defaults and one of the arevim defaults, you have the second arev to go after. No, you might. It's an extra layer of safety. So questions like this. The question is: is the pshat that you're an arev for $5,000 and you're an arev for $5,000, or I have two arevim for $10,000? I have double the protection. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a good point. Like this, we find that svara by a mashkin. When you give a mashkin, that means I'm relying. When you're holding on to a mashkin, where you don't have to collect from anyone, there's no trust involved. There's we had that svara in the Beis Yosef that there's no concept of arevs. That being said, by every loan, you're also trusting the loiva by an arev stam. So the fact that you're relying on a second person does not mean there's no hemday. It means I'm trusting this person and that person and that person. There's trust to all of them. And therefore, you don't need the full trust. You just need that I need to arevim. Without your signature, I'm not going to give the money. With yours, I'm willing to. That's all the hemnei that you need. So this is a machlokes, what to do if there are multiple arevim. The tzoyis' hachra is that in a typical case where you become an arev kodem matan mois, you have to go after each one of them for half of the money. So if there are two arevim on the $10,000 choyev, each of them would only have to pay $5,000. But that's only l'charchila. If, on the other hand, one arev defaults, one arev runs out of money and he's not able to pay, then the second arev would be responsible for the rest of it, at least as an arev. In other words, we look at the ikker liability is only on half, but he's now like an arev on the arev on the other half, but it's an arev stam, not an arev kavlin. And therefore, in that case, you would first have to go to one arev for his half, and only if the other one defaults can you go after the first one for the entire amount. What? Okay. Tzoyis, Nesivus, Mabit, there's a lot of rate about that, so I'm not going to have time for that. One last halacha is that a similar machlokes is if two people borrow money together, two partners buy something together, they borrow money together. Here, too, as well, there's an automatic arvus that each partner is responsible for the entire debt. However, again, there's a machlokes, many shittos say you first have to go after each partner for his half, because if two partners, each of them owes half. If there's a default, then the other partner is automatically an arev, even though he didn't say anything. There's an implied arevus because they're partners. You can go after him for the other half. But according to many pesukim, that's only in the event of a default. But l'chachilo, you first have to go after each arev for their each partner, each of the borrowers for their prorated share, and only afterwards can you go meet an arevus. Okay, this is the last shir on arevus, and we're going to now break for the summer. Mirat Hashem, we will restart the program on, I think, Ches Elul?
August 23rd.
Ches Elul. Everyone has a little break. Enjoy your summer.